Off the Ball Breakfast.
I've used Rory McIlroy's achievement as personal growth for myself. You can overcome adversity to lead your business in Q2.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
We've done everything completely backwards this week when it comes to the Hurling Pod. So the Members Pod, which we're going to make available for free because it's the nature of the conversation we had this week, is with the head of hurling, Willie Maher. He took a whole lot of listener questions, he chatted to us, we shot the breeze about his new role, about some of the changes that could potentially happen. Skell got a cold right in the middle of it, which he still has now. We survived Willie Maher's dog, which he got a haircut earlier today, coming in during the middle of the podcast as well. So that's going to be available for free in both video and in audio form for you. Main pod this week, we're going to focus on the last round of the round robin in both Munster and Leinster, and we'll throw a little bit of Joe McDonagh in there as well, because I was watching the end of that on Saturday and all the drama that ensued, particularly at Netwatch Cullen Park. But first of all, Paul Murphy, how are you?
Good now, lads. How are you?
James Skell, have you survived that sneeze in the middle of the intro?
I have. I'm fine. Well, thank you for your concern.
Good. I'm very concerned, because it could all go horribly wrong if you're sneezing between now and the rest of it. I don't know. Maybe it's not quite as novel having all three of us back this week, but it was nice to be back together last week. And we saw that in the comments. People enjoyed the trio being reunited. Well, here we are again to look back in the weekend. Again, we'll probably get into it. Lots of people are now complaining at this stage about the Hurling Championship, and it's peaked on weekend one with those two very interesting games we had at Munster. And since then, we haven't had a good game since. We'll see what the lads think. But Cork are into the Munster Hurling Final for the first time since 2018. 6-point win for them against Waterford at the weekend, secured a trip back to Limerick on June the 7th for that decider. Also announced earlier today, recording on Monday this week, so you want to get a chance to watch everything, that basically if you're not already getting your tickets from the county boards or you're a season ticket holder in Limerick or Cork, you ain't going to the Gaelic grounds on June the 7th with a ticket, because they reckon tickets won't come back on sale. It was sold out entirely between the two counties for the round robin meeting there a few weeks ago. I think it's very unlikely that any of them will meet general sale or even go back on resale. Familiar tale for Waterford this year again. Still haven't come out of the round robin in Munster. The years they did come out, they got to an All-Ireland final, it's when the round robin was on ice during the pandemic. But the Daisha and Clare's summer are now both over at this stage. Tipperary will go into the Premier League quarterfinals after Cork's win at the weekend. Galway's first away championship win against Dublin. Skell was worried last week. He said, not a thorn in our side, but a spear in our side they've been. Clearly remembering 2019. Will Galway turn them over? Set up a Leinster final against Kilkenny. Antrim dropping into the Joe McDonagh Cup after their loss against Offaly on the last day in Leinster. They will be replaced by either Laois or Kildare. Those neighbours are going to meet in the McDonagh Cup final. Kildare into the second flight final for the first time in their history, while Laois scrambled what was a late, far too late for Carlo supporters' goal. There were two more plays after the 3 minutes of injury time. Laois managed to scramble the ball into the net, and that snatched a draw, which is enough to send them to Croke Park on the day of the Leinster final. 20,000 free tickets available for under 14s. Willie Maher was telling us over 1,000 of them have been snapped up already. So we might have a big crowd at Croke Park for that final. And that is what we need to break down from this weekend. Before we go any further, Skell, because I didn't actually get to ask you about this when we were chatting to Willie Maher, this to me is a brilliant idea, getting under 14s into Croke Park who normally might not have went. We've bemoaned the low crowds living at Croke Park for Leinster finals in recent years. And now we're going to have 20,000 screaming kids for not just Kilkenny against Galway, but also for the McDonagh Cup final as well.
But also it provides an opportunity for clubs to act. So that if now the tickets are available, let's say you've one big, I suppose, headache taken care of. So as Murph alluded to in the previous pod, you know, getting on the bus, we've all done it as children. It's a very exciting time, regardless of what county you're going for. But if it's one of your own counties as part of the four participants, like, it just seems like this is too good an opportunity to pass up for most clubs. I'm pretty sure my own club would probably run a bus or two, you know, as will most clubs in Galway that have representatives on the panel, I would hope. So Willie was saying that there was about 1,000 tickets that was taken up already, and that's only on the back of the announcement, which was yesterday, I think, was it the other day or previous, I could be wrong. So you'd imagine in the space of the 2 weeks that these 20,000 tickets should go. And even for people, you know, who aren't part of the participating counties, who might live in proximity to the venue, they might take it up too, you know. What's wrong with going, let's say, with a family of three kids, you know, if they're of age, obviously, and tipping down to Croke Park for exciting day of hurling. So I think it's a great incentive, a good idea. And I'm all for those type of ideas. You know, an idea that hasn't been too, I suppose, prominent in the sport. I don't remember it being done before. Maybe you guys might correct me. But it's just good to see these little, what you call them, mini steps in the right direction, trying to promote it. Because, look, there's an awful lot of talk about hurling, don't get me wrong. But sometimes we don't see enough action. So this is one step.
Yeah, I don't ever remember it in this scale. Like, I remember we would have got subsidized tickets when we were kids, and it was always handy when it was just a fiver and you were getting the bus up and you went to Grove Park and happy days.
Yeah.
And I've heard of free tickets being given out to clubs, you know, to incentivize them to go to matches, but not in the scale of 1/4 of the ground being given away for free tickets for under 14s. Like, I think this is a really good idea by Leinster GAA, and credit to them and their chairperson, Derek Kent. Murph, to tackle the question before we dig into the games in the weekend, has this been a little bit disappointing this time round in the round robin, or were our expectations brought up to a very high level because we had these two thrilling draws in the first week in Munster particularly, and you felt like, championship is back, this is going to be great. Has it been a little bit of a damp squib since then?
I don't think so. Well, from my point of view, no. I think we've had really good games. Like the Munster Championship, and let's face it, that's what we're talking about at the moment, it's been outstanding over the last few years. And yes, we had a game yesterday. We had one game not televised between Limerick and Clare. Who could have forecast at the start of this year that would not even be televised nor be relevant? Like, I mean, nobody could have known that. And then also we had Waterford and Cork, who were in the straight shootout situation, which turned into a cagey match. Like, that could have turned into an unbelievably exciting match. You just don't, on paper it had potential. But sometimes these games, the nerves or whatever it is, the caginess just plays into it. It dictates the game. It nearly just decides what terms the game is played on. But I don't think so. Like, again, when we look back, like, even though there's some Munster Championships only a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago that were absolutely outstanding, even though we're only a few years on, in our memories, like, they were absolutely pristine, unbelievable, flawless championships. But if you go back and look at the Nicola Day, there was patches in it that were not perfect either. I just think that it's held to such a high standard now that we're surprised when a damp squib of a game comes along. No, I think it's been a really good championship. Munster has been unbelievably exciting. I think we got all our predictions wrong in the first weekend, which is, I think, sure, two draws. Straight away, you're saying that's actually a good thing, you know, probably, because it's not playing out the way we thought it was going to play out. If things aren't playing out the way you thought it was going to play out, it means it's probably exciting. So, and we saw the likes of Waterford making a good tilt at actually getting out of Munster. They had a real chance yesterday. Like, I mean, at one stage yesterday, they were 3 points away. Well, I mean, I know they're in the lead yesterday, but let's say the second half coming down the home straight, they were 3 points away and Cork looked kind of rattled. So if you look at it from that point of view, you know, that little shift of balance, Tipperary after coming out of Munster, where they hadn't been over the last year. So you're kind of just looking at it going, there was a little bit of a changing of the guard to an extent. Granted, we have Limerick back in the final, but we have Cork back for the first time since 2018. So, like, we've seen a small bit of a shift, and I think the excitement has been there. I would never let the last game or, you know, decide what the rest of the championship or the last few weeks of the championship has been like. I think it's been really good, and there's been lots of excitement and stories and drama along the way. So, I think it's been really good.
Yeah, I was chatting to Matt Cooper on The Last Word earlier on about this, and he had raised the question. It was partly the way it was in my head. And I was thinking last year, I remember there was plenty of bemoaning before the Cork-Limerick game when Cork won with the last gasp Hoggy penalty. And then it felt like the championship kind of exploded from there. But there were plenty of people last year who were going, you know what, maybe this isn't quite as good as the year before. So sometimes we forget this. If you get a couple of good semi-finals and a good final, all is forgotten. And you go, wow, actually, the Ireland Championship was amazing. Yeah. So I'm always very mindful of kind of recency bias as well. Yeah. Part of that is probably because of Leinster. Like, I was just kind of chopping it down here. So Kilkenny won by double digits against Galway in the first round. Galway's scale will bring us in a while. Have improved since then and won their four games. Handed out a few kickings themselves. 14 points against Offaly. 10 against Wexford. I've 28 against Antrim down here. Kilkenny won a lot of the other games at a canter, and then rested players for the last game against Wexford or experimented a little bit. So we didn't quite get that. The actual competitive games that we had in Leinster really were probably Dublin-Offaly the first round, the Offaly-Wexford game, and then Antrim-Offaly at the end. One of them was televised. So a lot of that was kind of off-Broadway, as we say, by comparison. And maybe we weren't helped by seeing, you know, games in Leinster that were Galway hammering people's scale, like the Antrim game. Like, that's no good advertisement for the Leinster Championship to see that type of game.
Yeah, but how do you pick that one?
I know, I don't know.
Do you pick it on it? Because I know you might laugh, but go back to the stat that Willie threw out about the population in Down versus Connacht. Like, do you pick that because the population is so high in Antrim and it's about membership or subscriptions? That's a possibility.
My suspicion would be, so that afternoon you had a doubleheader in Salt Hill.
Yeah.
So you're bringing over the OB truck and you're bringing over the TV crews because you've got Galway against Dublin in the football later on in the day. It's all set up and good to go. Maybe it made sense to do it from that point of view.
All right, fair. I'll give you that.
That'd be my only suspicion. Maybe I'm wrong.
But. I just don't see sense in it, you know. And even if you're picking at the start of the year, regardless of form or what any team is going through in the season, you'd say that wouldn't be a fixture that would to be honest, would look as a competitive fixture. Let's be frank about it. So, but it's been underwhelming, though, the Leinster Championship, hasn't it? In fairness, it has, like, you know. And I don't know, is that the fixture structure? You know, yes. Kilkenny really got, you know, to be honest, didn't get much of a game beyond probably the last 20 minutes against Dublin. Would that be fair to say? Beyond the,
yeah.
In the whole championship, like, Galway put up no game against them. Nor did Offaly, nor did Wexford was irrelevant.
I
didn't count it, you know, because there was a shadow of the start 15. So it's just been, like, it's tough to compete against Munster. Munster, everything is lined up for Munster to thrive.
Hmm.
You know, when you don't have one of your own counties involved in the Munster Championship, it's going to thrive. So it's like we said it before. It's the golden chalice of the GAA or the hurling, say, that you don't touch Munster, you leave it as it is, and that's why more often than not you get top tier games. Of course you do. When you bring in teams that say we're Connacht, then you bring in an Ulster team, etc. There's an element of facilitation about Leinster, which I think is fair, and it's kudos to Leinster for accommodating that. But on the backside of that, you get, you know, sometimes not very competitive games. You know, but without Leinster doing that, where would we be? We'd be in a completely hung championship entirely.
Yeah, no, you definitely would. And like, if anyone's listening in Leinster Council at the moment, my only appeal to you would be this. Don't set it up next year where the fixtures are the same as the year before, where it's the team who've come up from the McDonagh Cup play against the team who they're most likely to be in a relegation battle with in the last game. Don't leave Kilkenny and Wexford to the last game because that could end up as a dead rubber. And don't have Galway and Kilkenny right at the start of the championship. That's this really familiar pattern. Like, you'll know, Scale, how many times have Galway and Dublin played each other in the last round? Like, it's set up in a very clear structure that last game is meant to be the traditional rivals of Kilkenny and Wexford. Galway play against Dublin and the two teams fighting relegation. If you keep doing that, you run the risk of this sounding really, really, really boring.
You're right. To answer your question, this is the seventh year. Right? Obviously, took out COVID. It's the seventh year that this round-robin championship has been in place, right? And Dublin have played Galway on the last day 6 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
don't get me wrong. I can understand totally why they do it. Because it's trying to set up that situation where they're probably two teams fighting to get in the top three. You get the two traditional rivals on the last day and you have a relegation playoff like we saw with Offaly and Antrim in the week just gone by. And it was the same with Carlow going to Antrim the year before. Westmeath playing Antrim the year before that. Which just goes to prove this is not a fixture computer that's randomly pulling this out. They have a structure that they want the championship to take. And I think when you've got a lot of teams who are going to put beatings on each other along the way, just shake it up a bit next year. Give it a little shake around. And let that be the first game. Or let maybe Galway and Kilkenny be the last round. Yeah. Probably don't want that because they know it'll probably be the final of Leinster. So.
Split Kilkenny in two, yeah.
There you go, Murph. That's the first hot take, I think, of this pod we've had so far. I guess we kick things off with what happened on Lee's side at Páirc Uaibh, which is Cork bouncing back. Pat Ryan was good value after the game, by the way, if you want to check that interview across Off the Ball socials. He said he was very unhappy about a bookmaker particularly claiming that Cork were the All-Ireland favourites and paying out after the league final and then winning. He said it's very difficult to insulate the panel from that type of conversation because, naturally, it seeps through. And then people are thinking the world is over once they lose against Limerick. He felt that there was maybe an overreaction in the other direction after that 16-point defeat. So it's about trying to get Cork back to a level now to go to the Munster final. But they beat Waterford in the end, 226 to 1 goal in 13. Patrick Horgan, TJ Reid are running up big totals. They're going almost toe-to-toe each week now at this stage. Hoggy with 1-8, Brian Hayes with 1-1, Alan Connolly with 3 points in play, Seamus Harnedy, who came into the team with 3 points as well, Shane Barrett, captain, with 3 points, Dara Fitzgibbon with 2. And then you look across to the Waterford side, and this tells its own story. Shane Bennett, 1-7, 6 from frees, been a massive part of their total, really.
Stephen Bennett, I should say.
And then you had Jamie Barron, who I thought was really good throughout the game as well, Murph. But again, a familiar enough story when it came to Waterford, where outside of Bennett putting over those scores, and we can talk about maybe should have had a penalty during the game as well, they're not contributing enough outside of that. 113 is too low a total if you're going to win in Páirc Uaibh.
It is, yeah. And it's really a reflection of just the small bit of lack of depth that they just don't have there across the team and even into the bench. You need to be in into the bench as well. Whereas you look at Cork and you have like Healy coming off the bench and having an impact straight away, Conor Lehan, all these lads, never mind the rest of the scorers around the field. You always just got this impression with Waterford this year. And it's not to put a dampener on Waterford, because they have improved this year. Like, they have taken a step on. They got that scalp on their opening day against Clare. They were unfortunate that they didn't build on that, but like, they were showing really good signs. And like, the way they turned up to Cork, you have to give it credit. Like, they got stuck in from the start and they were running hard at them. And I think they were up 5-1 after a few minutes. They're like, you know, they really did give it a good rattle. They should have had a penalty. There's no other way of saying anything about it. I don't think there's any other thing you can say about it. And if they got that penalty, I still do think Cork would have ignited Cork, because that's something I feel I'm picking up on Cork, is that Cork go up through the gears when, you know, they feel the bit of heat coming on them. It's a dangerous game to play, but they're able to do that. And I think they would have reacted and would have come back against Waterford. But nevertheless, it would have been a fairly formidable platform for Waterford to be up on, considering this was a straight shootout. But it is just around the field, you felt Cork could come up with scores that bit easier. They had more threats around the field. And when the game opened up that bit, you know, Cork should have kicked on by more. They should have closed out the game. But Waterford were just that bit too one-dimensional in that, you know, looking for Bennett. You know, the scores, even the goal he got, like, it was a little bit too reliant on him. But look, it may be, again, a case of, we spoke about it, or I mentioned it there last week or 2 weeks ago. If we speak about Galway, Micheál Donoghue being back and saying, okay, well, it's the first year and, you know, you build on that for the second year. We've seen it with Liam Cahill. We've seen it with Pat Ryan. You know, you can't just automatically get traction the first year. You build for the next year. It's no good to Waterford now at the moment. Like, they would have wanted to come out of Munster. However, I think they are pointed in a bit more of a positive direction. And maybe the few lads who went off travelling this year, like Caleb Lyons, is a huge loss to that Waterford team. Like, you know, if he's there yesterday, you know, a lot could happen. There's plenty of lads who have went travelling and who've stepped away that potentially could come back into that panel. So next year, they could make another step forward. However, look, just yesterday, I know we'll get to Cork in a minute, but just to leave it with Waterford, you just never got the impression that they were showing signs of coming back, but were they ever going to get over the line and close it out? No. Like, you would have felt that it would have been more down to the fact of Cork not being at the races more than Waterford being the better team than Cork on the day.
Yeah, you felt, Murph, before I bring Skell in, this, that kind of Cork left them hanging in the game a little bit as well. They racked up the wides, particularly second half. Cork at 13 wides. Different, more clinical day. Maybe they put up a bigger scoreline. But you kind of felt that they had Waterford at arm's length, but just weren't killing the game.
Yeah, like, I think there's part of it here as well is, like, I was thinking about it again. I played in these games, maybe not at the same stage, but, like, we spoke last week about the beating that Limerick gave Cork was similar to when Galway and Skell and the boys bet us in 2012, in that you're hit hard, you had to deal with it very quickly, turn around and go play a match. Like, we had to play Limerick the few days afterwards. I think it was 6 days, 7 days afterwards, maybe in the quarterfinal. I don't think it was 2 weeks. I think it was a very quick turnaround. And we had to play Limerick. And it was a cagey game. You know, we hadn't decreased enormously as a bad team or as a team over that week or over that 2 weeks. But it was a case that there was a psychological element of it there, where maybe there was a small bit of frailty there that Galway had left on us. However, you know, once we got through that game, we felt we were in a better place. And that's where Cork are going to be. But I felt that part of Cork's play was that little bit of jitteriness, that little bit of anxiety, that they hadn't really put Waterford away. They were hitting a few wides. They were maybe making a few of those unconfident decisions at different times, and that's what kept them in it. But then, like that, on the flip side, when Waterford were just about coming back at them, again, Cork were able to turn it back on, shoulder class, Patrick Horgan's goal, you know, Brian Hayes' goal to start the second half. They still had that bit of class, but I just think a little bit of it is the hangover. And I'm going to speak from experience there. A little bit is the hangover from having experienced the loss a week before. But this will stand a lot to Cork, and I genuinely do believe that. Like, you don't become a bad team overnight. And likewise, you know, they just needed to get a game under their belt to do a bit of a reset. That doesn't mean that they suddenly return to play Limerick and they're in a fantastic place. There's work to do. But that game will serve Cork really well. And it's, and like I said, it's speaking from being in that position a few times. Like even 2019, Wexford Betters in the Leinster final. You know, we had to play a quarter final then, and then against Cork, actually, funnily enough, and then go play in Limerick. But that one game under the belt is huge. It's better than any training session. It's better than anything you can do. That one game really stands to you. So I just felt there was a little bit of the hangover from the Limerick game in Cork's play. They should have been ahead by far more. They should have closed it out. But the win is the win, and that's the main thing that they're concerned about.
Yeah. Scott, the old black card and penalty appears to have disappeared again. That one to me seemed like it was probably the most textbook one possible when Coleman brings down Bennett. You're thinking, right, this is exactly where this rule is brought in.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. Like sometimes these tackles, you can make it look like that it's an accidental, you know, collision, trip, hurl. You make, call it what you want. But Coleman puts his left arm in over Bennett's shoulder and pulls him down.
Yeah.
So it, all things being equal, as even if Johnny Murphy, was it?
Mm.
Yeah.
If he was a small bit, let's say, not sure, blow the whistle, even chat to him first. Do you know what I mean? Even if you were, but like, it was so blatantly obvious. So blatantly obvious it was comical.
I think he did actually talk to the umpires, if I remember correctly. And I was surprised. I was like, ah, the umpire's going to say, yeah, no, Johnny, you're right there. I was very surprised.
I'd like to see a ref take a second. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just take a moment and use every available resource to you as possible and then make a decision. Because, you know, yourself, in real time, you'd have a good feeling that'll sway either side. You'd be 70-80% towards your good feeling and then take your time. So I just thought it was laughable, really and truly. Yeah. But look, what can we say? I don't think in the grand scheme of things, you know, like, even if he did get the penalty and get a goal, I couldn't see the game going anywhere else. Just a question of quality. And that's what we said last week when we were talking about, let's say, what gaps are going to be in this game. We were all saying 6-7 points, I think you said, Murph, or something similar. And, you know, again, as you know, big analytics guy here, just look at the shot count, look at the amount of wides. You know, Cork score, what, was it 225, was it? And then 17 wides? That's huge. That's huge shooting. Like, so that's an awful lot of pressure to sustain over a prolonged period. And Waterford did well to fight back. But I just think it was a question of, you know, whatever gear Waterford hopped into, Cork could go another one.
Yeah.
So if Waterford hopped into fourth gear and rattled on the goal, Cork would down again the far side and get another one. You know, it's just that they had enough, you know, to change pace if they had to. And, like, I think, to touch on as well, it's probably a nice way to go about your championship, because there was an awful lot of talk, and from this podcast inclusive, about Cork, particularly after the league campaign, the way they started the championship as well, the pace they started off. And it must be very difficult for a management team to try block out that kind of noise, the overwhelming positive talk, because sometimes that kind of talk can have just a big of impact on your team as the negative talk. Yeah. So for the Limerick game to come and pass the way it did, I think in the grand scheme of things, you'd say that's a positive for Cork, because that nothing will sharpen your mind or get a renewed sense of focus than getting hammered by Limerick and having to dust yourself down really fast to go face a Waterford team fighting for their life. So I'd say, yes, they got somewhat of a semi-shock in the Limerick game, but it's such a way to align yourself in to make a serious championship run. And the same way, they can go and play Limerick now in the Munster final. They can go and play without any fear. Or there's no trapdoor, nothing of the case. They still have a route towards Ireland. And like, it's amazing to think that the likes of, you know, Clare won the Ireland last year. And the one tour is like Tony Kelly, David McInerney, John Connan, and they've no Munster title. It's amazing to think that. Yeah. So all is not lost if you don't come out of your province. You know, you can perform really well in your province. You can win the Munster title. It doesn't guarantee you an Ireland series. So the big one, albeit as important as Munster is the Ireland. So and they're going to have to probably go through Limerick potentially three times if that's the case, in my view. So I think it's positive for Pat Ryan, and I just think, you know, he's. It's amazing the way the landscape changes in hurling in over 6-7 days. Like, you never get too high and you win. Don't get too low and you lose. So just like Cork were going so well, don't get too low after Limerick kind of, I suppose, teaching you a lesson. Just remain neutral, and this is a good way to do it.
Yeah, I wrote down after the game here on my sheet. I'm not quite got to Scales' level of no-keeping here, but I knew 27 shots was going to stand out for him in that second half.
Yep.
That's a lot of shooting from Cork. I know it didn't all go over for them, but they scored 212 out of the 27 shots that they had, so they were creating the chance in that second half. Like, to me as well, Murph, it felt like there was a bit of a pattern here if you want to look at the Waterford side of things. So again, they get a lead early on. As you mentioned, there are 5 points to one up. It was like getting the 1-2 early on against Tipperary the week before. They still stay within touching distance around kind of 50 minutes or so even after the Cork goals, but Cork then get a run of scores and put themselves into a position. And then down the stretch, I didn't feel like Waterford were going to close it back and actually turn them over. So, like, to me, that's a very familiar pattern from two games that we watched over the last couple of weekends.
Yeah, it is. Like Watford were required in many games. They had no option but to start hard and start fast. Like, you know, we saw it plenty of times where they're going out and they're getting stuck in straight away. They're getting in teams' faces. And I mean, it's all very positive positively. Like it wasn't negative stuff, but I think they knew they had to start fast and then hope that they could impose their game on a team, and that by maybe rattling the team and hitting them early, the opposition might lose shape. Like Clare lost shape when Cork really went at them. It was in Welsh Park, and Watford actually played way better into the wind in the second half of that game. But quite a bit of it was down to Clare losing their shape. And the one time where I thought, well, okay, there's two things that need to happen here, was when Watford got within 3 points of Cork, and highly potential that the ball goes on. Like Stephen Bennett nearly got a second goal at a really good time, where if he got that goal, it's now a very nervy, very cagey game. If that happens, is there potential there that Cork lose their shape? I still don't think Cork would lose their shape, but there are teams that would, because panic sets in. You kind of just, it's every man for themselves. You're hurling your own patch and you're trying to get a bit of stability back into it. So for me, there was two things that needed to happen. Watford get that goal, like I said, they nearly did with Stephen Bennett, and Cork lose their shape. But I never got the impression that Cork were going to lose their shape. And particularly when you look at the likes of when they were bringing Kingston off the bench and Lehan off the bench and Healy off the bench, you were just going, they just have the quality here that it mightn't be pretty at times, but they're going to do what's necessary. And sometimes necessary is all that you need to do. And that probably carries over into what Pat Ryan said after the game. And I do understand it. Like, he has a job in itself of getting this team to the pitch of their powers, to be hurling well, to have the team buzzing. But now he also has to deal with, you know, the circus that there is around it. But the thing is, yeah, about it is that when you're favourites, that circus is always there. So you just have to deal with that. And that little kick in the arse they got against Limerick. Again, I've gotten that before. Skett has gotten that before. If you're due that any year, you'd rather get it early. You'd rather get it before it's too late, instead of getting in an All-Ireland semi-final where you're like, shite, we weren't prepared for that. So they got that. Like, if you look at Cork now, they're after getting that. They're after getting a cagey game under their belt where they were playing a Waterford team in Last Chance Saloon who, you know, went at them, did whatever they could, but just couldn't get over the line. And with that, they'll be analysing this going, we had 27 shots in the second half. We had 17 wides. We did this. There's a lot of positives pulled from this. So Cork will look at this going, okay, at times it might have been pretty. At times Waterford might have been in touching distance. But at all times we did what was necessary to win the game. And that's a good place to be in, that when we need it, when we need to do what's necessary, we are doing what's necessary and we're coming away with a win. So, I just think Cork will be quietly happy approaching a Munster final in a very grounded place as they are at the moment. It might have been perfect from an ego or from a confidence point of view, but from a grounded approach going into the Munster final now, it is actually a decent place to go in.
Hmm. When it comes to Waterford here, Skell, look, their season has come to an end in May, which is obviously never part of the plan. But when they reflect on the year, I'm wondering two things they might be a bit disappointed about, like quite aside from the lads who've gone travelling, they kind of weakened the panel early on, is that they got things together. They won Division 1B, they got promotion, got to the Championship, and then maybe didn't get the return from some of the players they would have hoped. Like Desi Hutchinson was dropped for this game, didn't really happen for him in the last game against Tipperary. Ozzy Gleeson probably didn't have the impact that maybe Peter Quigley would have been hoping for this year as well. That maybe if you had those two firing at their very, very top level, that might have brought Waterford up a little bit, but it just didn't happen for them.
Yeah, it didn't, but if they're to assess, take this now from the Waterford public perspective, if they're to assess this year versus last year, would you say this year is more positive than last year? Absolutely, yes. You remember last year, there was an awful lot of noise about the Waterford setup, the way they were operating, player selection, their goalkeeper playing out centre back. You know, it didn't have a very kind of positive flow about it. It was very, you know, you didn't know what kind of way the Waterford players were thinking last year. You know, it didn't seem like there were a positive camp. This year is the opposite, really. And I know they started off the league campaign in very difficult circumstances with an exodus. There was players leaving, there was players injured, but they regrouped and got it together. And what they set out to achieve this start of the year was get qualification out of 1B. That's achieved. So even as a whole, you're obviously judged on Championship, but they have to take some victories under new management as well. So they got out of the league. That's a positive step. They were a very competitive Munster. That's been honest now. They were competitive, but they just weren't at the level yet. But that in itself is a positive indication of the work that Peter Quigley and his management team has done. So I don't think it's course is disappointing to be out of the Championship. Of course it's. But it's not as bad as or doom and gloom as one might think. there's positive steps here. And Murph makes a great point. It's very, very hard to see a team get a full kick, you know, to a level whereby you're competing with the Limericks and Kinnies this world in your first year. There, you need time for integration. You need time to build your team the way you want to build it, to breathe, build in new players, to, you know, to do your schemes, everything. So year two, year three is when we can really judge. And like, people have short memories too here about the Cork team. Remember, was it Pat Ryan last year, Murph? You were saying that was close to the chopping block midway through the season? You're muted there, Murph.
Was it two years ago or was it last year?
I think it was, I can't remember. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
I thought Clare beat him in Páirc Uí Chaoimh last year. And there was rumours about Pat Ryan getting the job taken off him.
I think you're right.
So you see the way the things, the landscape can change so often. I know Walter Rowe, of course, yeah, but I think it's been a positive ish. I use that word lightly. Do you know what I mean?
Year for Walter,
considering where they came from the last couple of years.
Peter Queeley's comments, by the way, after the game, he said, we're probably just not getting enough scores. Our totals in the last three games have been around 22, 23 points. We need to be getting closer to 30. The challenge for us now is to make it attractive to hurl for Waterford next year. I still think it is, and I think those guys in there believe it is as well. Once the dust settles and they're finished playing with their club, I think we'll all look forward to coming back in. Maybe we'll get one or two more back. We've a few lads travelling at the moment, so maybe we could be in a stronger position at this time next year. So I think they're all very fair points, which are made by Peter Queeley about the year that they've just had. And again, 22-23 is not going to cut it when you're playing.
Again, when I'm assessing both teams yesterday, I was talking about, I said, just the, not a gulf, gulf is the wrong word to use, just the difference of quality between the forward units. And do you think with all the news that's been surrounding Bennett's hips, will he be able to play next year? I think it's a viable question. He's probably looking and staring down the barrel of a hip replacement or hip replacements, I'd imagine. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of players playing under hip replacement, to be fair.
No. Yeah, I think it's tough.
It's a rare case, isn't it?
You would have to think as well, there'll be a temptation on his part. Like, he's not getting an All-Ireland medal in his pocket, but he's got the appearance record now. He's got the scoring record for Waterford. He's been, you know, carrying a lot of responsibility for that team for quite some time. Then maybe he would just say, look, I've done what I can for the jersey and I need to prioritise my own health. You couldn't blame him for doing that, could you?
It's a quality life issue, surely. Yeah, so like, if you're trying to build from a Waterford perspective, you're trying to build with forwards, losing your best forwards is a tricky proposition, but it might be the best thing for him going forward in his life. Like, you can't have him going through. I can imagine that the pain and efforts he's going through. Every time I watch him on television now and I see the tackles he puts in, I'm thinking, geez, that man must be just either up to his eyeballs in cortisone or he must have a very high pain threshold.
Could be both. Again, I hope we see him next year, but I would totally understand if he was to at least have that consideration during the off-season here. Murph, where are you at Cork at this stage then? Because, you know, everyone's talking about the hype around them and so on. Cold facts when it comes to the Munster Championship. Had a 12-point lead against Clare, let it slip. They lost by 16 points against Limerick. And I'm sure the people who would argue that the 14 men against Tipperary made a big impact in that game as well. Mm-hmm. And now they've beaten Waterford. So for you, Murph, as they get ready for this trip up to the Gaelic grounds, what's your assessment on where Cork are at now after playing the round robin?
Cork... after playing around Robin, look, I know there was a lot of hype, no more than ourselves. We definitely had them down as our favourites to win the All-Ireland, etc. But Cork, capable of beating any team in the Championship. That's my route one for Cork. They absolutely are. Whatever day they turn up, they're very capable of going beating any team, including Limerick. We looked at Limerick over the weekend. We saw highlights of Limerick over the weekend. You know, not being flawless against Clare and Clare beating them, which was kind of a very strange thing to try and make sense of how or why did it happen, etc. They had a very good team out. It wasn't, I'd say it wasn't the same as, let's say, Kilkenny Wexford. Like, I mean, if you look at the team that Limerick had out, certainly there was a few players that hadn't played as much this year. Outstanding team, though, nonetheless. So when you look at Cork, I say, yeah, Cork have taken a small bit of a kicking over the last 2 weeks, let's say, over the whole being bet by Limerick. But when you look at it now, three games away from winning an All-Ireland final, that's really what they're looking at. Like, you know, it starts to get a lot easier to comprehend over the next few weeks, because all these permutations of what if this and what if that, and we're on the road, it all gets very, it's simpler now over the next while. They win the next game. Their next two games are in Croke Park, let's say, if they go to win them. If they lose the next game, they only have one more game, then they're very capable of still, from this place, going and win the All-Ireland. The other question with that is, what are Limerick going to do? We've seen Limerick be just really go up through the gears over the last few weeks. So that is the big question for them. Like, if it, I'll put it this way, the two permutations for Cork, let's say if this game comes a week too early for them, where they go to the Gaelic grounds and Limerick beat them, is that a nail in their coffin for this year? Psychologically, I don't know what way that group of players are like. It may be, but as Skehill alluded to earlier, there's Clare boys with two All-Ireland medals and no Munster Championship. You can still go and win the All-Ireland from there. And the flip side of that, let's say they go to the Gaelic grounds and beat Limerick. Well, you're probably going to have to beat Limerick twice if you want to win this All-Ireland. So there's lots of ways to look at this. And I'm going to take from what Willie Maher spoke about, not to give away any surprises for the pod that's coming up later in the week, but you take it, what way to eat an elephant, to take it in small chunks. You look at the next game. You want to go to the Gaelic grounds and banish a lot of the ghosts that you had from the last game you played. You want to hit them hard. You want to go back and say, yeah, we can perform against this Limerick team. That was a once-off. That wasn't down to hurling skill. It wasn't down to anything else. Only we didn't work hard enough. We came maybe with a blasé attitude that we thought, you know, it'll be all right in the night when we arrive against Limerick. And Limerick blew us away. We got our warning, but now let's go and perform. And the thing is with them is that if they go and they don't beat Limerick in the Gaelic grounds, well, all is not lost. But it's how that match plays out for me. Win or lose, it's how that match plays out will decide the rest of Cork's year. If they go and die in their sword and are beaten by Limerick by a point, that's fine. Like, you go into a quarter final with a bit between your teeth, you're an absolute savage, no team wants to play you because you're so hardened by what you're after going through over the last while. But if you go down there and take an absolute lambasting off them because you're not ready again, I think there is the nail in the coffin for you there. So the manner in which they approach this Limerick game, but I'll go back to what you said, Will, at the start. Where am I with Cork? Cork can beat any team in this championship. That's where I am at Cork. But the question is how will they go about the rest of the championship now? And what way will the team as a group approach? Like, we will learn so much from this Munster final of this. Like, if you look at Clare, and I'll hand it over now in a second, but if you look at Clare were able to go, they almost, not to say they had a get out of jail free card, but like, when Clare played Limerick in the Munster finals, they lost them. But people are like, geez, this Clare team is just a hair's breadth away from beating this Limerick team. If Cork lose, people will go, ah, this Cork team isn't what it's cracked up to be. They're not, you know, they're not the great team. So there's actually a different narrative around this Cork team, I feel, compared to what, and that's not giving these lads an out. It's not giving them a cushion, a safety net. It's just the hype train is up and going. And it probably goes back to my earlier point of what Pat Ryan has to deal with. There's so many dynamics at play here that this Cork team can only look at this game as a single game, go, right, well, let's just control the controllables here. Work hard, hit these lads hard, get scores, you know, die in our boots, and whatever happens, happens, and we'll approach the next game after that. So I just think that, like, they can achieve a lot this year. They can still go and win the All-Ireland, but it's just a matter of how they bounce back now over the next few weeks.
I looked this up so the listeners don't have to. Yes, people do eat elephant meat. Apparently it's not common, but in many cultures, but elephant meat is consumed in regions of Africa and Asia, particularly where elephants were hunted previously for ivory.
Probably not encouraged. I believe, Will, though, probably more of a metaphor, really. You don't have to chat GPT.
I know it is, but I did always wonder about this. It was, Google, a Wikipedia article, I think, may have found it there. But I was always intrigued, because even Willie said it, again, you're listening to this the wrong way around probably now at the moment, but when he brought it up about, eating an elephant in small pieces, I was like, do people actually eat elephants? And so when you said it again, I was like, I better just check people do actually eat them.
The only reason I said it is because it's now fresh in my memory.
It's in your mind, yeah.
I think what you'll have is, like, if Skehill comes out with a phrase, or you come out with a phrase now over the next, like, over this podcast, I will use it next week then. It'll just become my more recent phrases to use.
On that scale, you love your percentages, so why don't I give you this one? What's the percentage now of Cork winning the All-Ireland Championship this year?
Oh, fuck yeah. Sorry, that's a hard one to work out.
That's harder than working out if elephant meat is eaten or not.
The percentages I've given so far have been very definitive and easy to calculate.
Fairly right, but they were definitive, yeah.
Yeah, but the Cork one, I think they have a great chance. Like, it's very hard for us to make predictions, and because, again, these games can fluctuate so broadly. Like, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. Like, and just go back to Murph's point about the Munster final showdown, that Cork could A, beat Limerick, B, as Murph said, die with the boots on, or C, get back 12 for 13 points. Each possibility in my mind, is as equal as the other. And I don't know which is which, to be honest, at the moment. So you might go, what are you talking about? How can Cork win and get Pepe 12 points? That's just the potential that Limerick can come with. And I think it's down to Cork. Like, if they, and I mean this with great respect, if they allow happen what happened, you know, last week, then that's a sign that the team has a little bit of frailty, you know, a little bit of frailty. But if they go in battle hard, learn from what they learned a week ago, particularly the way Limerick set up, let's say, an inside line, learn what they learned a week ago and make it a real hard-fought game, then, right, you'll say Cork are back within a shout, you know, as major contenders. But in terms of percentage, I'll probably, it's the All-Ireland now, I'll start in Munster. I'm giving them a 45% chance to win Munster.
And then, I'm not going to preempt this. His chances of winning the All-Ireland is going to be higher than Munster, so go on.
And then for the All-Ireland, then I'm going to say they have a... Jesus, Limerick and Croke Park, the top in their last year.
Might not have to play them. Remember, they could get beaten in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Like the whole Clare Limerick talk last year.
I'm going to go 55%.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to go higher.
Yeah, I knew you'd do that.
Because you're talking about Limerick and the Gaelic grounds, lads. You know?
Yeah.
Tricky proposition. Now, you're talking about a different run. So, yeah. 45-55, that's where I'm going, lads. That's safe.
I can understand that. I would make it higher for the All-Ireland purely on the fact, and cards on the table, I don't think anyone is beating Limerick from where we have it now. I've switched allegiances that way. But Cork potentially could go the other side of the bracket, another team beats them, and then it's a case of Cork don't have to beat Limerick at Croke Park, which they did last year anyway in an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, but
so
do you know the Cork kind of fluency and flair we associate with the forwards, with free movement?
Uh-huh.
Forwards, I'll say, I just can't see Limerick allowing that happen again.
Yeah,
you know, I think Limerick learned from last year. Like, and it's not that like Limerick were overly poor last year and Cork were overly good. It's just that the Cork movement and that long ball that Limerick were struggling with, getting the Limerick halfback line go backwards, I just think they've learned. I think the management team in Limerick is just too clever and too smart to let that happen again. So and that to me like is one of the major reasons why Limerick got beaten last year. You know, so. It's just, I don't see history repeating itself, you know, twice this instance in 2 years.
Okay. It's funny, I never would have thought that Limerick and Clare would be a dead rubber at the end of it. Again, when the fixtures come out, you thought this is perfectly set up as potentially a Munster semi-final, or at least to determine who's going to be in the top three. As it worked out, this wasn't on TV, so what we saw was only on the Sunday game, and also I saw Peter Duggan's second sideline, which was an absolute peach, which was put up on social media earlier today as well, but we only got to see what we got to see. But Clare won 320 to 24 points. We had first starts of the year for Declan Hannan and for Shane O'Donnell. Again, Clare were probably thinking it's just a pity he wasn't fit a few weeks earlier. You had ultimately the two goals that swung it in Clare's favour came from Ryan Taylor. He scored 2-1. Mark Rogers with 1-8. Limerick made 7 changes from last week's team, brought in some of the experienced heads. So you had Donovan starting, you had Hannan starting, Dowling starting the championship for the first time since 2018. Tom Morrissey's hurl is still missing. If anyone can locate it and find it, it disappeared after the game. He scored 7 points, 5 of them from frees. Dermot Burns with 4 points, 3 from frees. And then outside of that, you had a good supporting cast for Limerick. Casey Hegarty, Flanagan all with 2 points and Colin O'Neill with 3. Ultimately, this didn't matter, Murph. But when it comes to John Kiely, if I can focus on Limerick, first of all, whatever about Clare finishing out their last game, I'm sure he's going to be happy to get some time into the legs of some of those fringe players and also some of the returning players who could still play a big part in the championship yet.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. Like, there's still a part of me that just thinks that I don't think John Kiely, whatever he says in the interviews after game, is happy any day that this Limerick team loses. Because really, regardless nearly what 15 this Limerick team puts out, they should be, if everybody is, I suppose, well-intentioned, winning matches. Like, you know, they're just such a... The panel is so exceptional that... I just don't think that John Kiely will allow himself to go to that space where he's entirely happy if they lose. So I'm sure on one side he's very happy that, yes, he got to, you know, give lads a game against Clare as well. Like, I mean, I know it's a dead rubber, but at the end of the day, you're getting to throw lads out against a really good team and get minutes into the legs and use it as a platform where lads are auditioning for the Munster final, really. Like, if there is a place or two places up for grabs there, you know, you're giving lads that scope to actually go and perform. So I'm sure he's happy with it from that point of view. But at the same time, you know, losing in the dead rubber, it's kind of a funny one, really. Like, losing in the dead rubber and Clare beating you, having Clare the way they performed so far this year, it's just a funny one to deal with. But it's not one that he has to or is going to dwell on either. It's very similar to Derek Ling's situation where, you know, Derek Ling got a lot of time into lads over the weekend and probably allowed him to then not have to carry any baggage after the game, i.e. it was a dead rubber also, and he didn't start what would be the 15. There was plenty of lads giving game time, but you can kind of park it after the game also, because it's so many changes to what you had traditionally over the course of round robin. So yeah, look, I just think that John Kiely wants to win any day he's goes out, but look, I think he will take the carrot from it that, yeah, we got game time into lads. As I think his main goal would be that there's savage competition in the panel, which we know there is, and being able to turn around and reward players and say, listen, lads, there's a Munster final in 2 weeks. Here's starting jerseys. Off you go. And then whatever team is picked the Thursday night before that Munster final, you have between now and then to get your name on that team sheet, which is what every manager really wants in terms of competition within the team.
Slightly bonkers scale with the way this has gone, where Clare didn't have a good defence of either their league or All-Ireland titles ultimately. The two wins that they pick up away from home at Limerick.
Yeah. I suppose context, really. Let's give it context now to be certain. Murphy's dead right, getting game time into guys who are on the panel, but also coming through the game unscathed, coming through injury free, where you have your full complement to pick for over the next 2 years or two weeks heading into a Munster final. I don't believe in coincidence with regards to the clear Limerick situation, but it's just as a whole, it's been such a I don't want to overstate it, but it's been a terrible year for Clare, hasn't it? It's just been a brutal series of events. Whether that be through, you know, injury, through players leaving the panel or not leaving the panel, whatever it is, through form, through availability, through, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's just been a year to write off. And it's sad in one sense, because I do feel like the likes of John Conlon will step away, potentially more, and it's not the best way to go out. But look at lessons learned, you think they were, but history is a habit of repeating itself in this instance, which is strange when you consider, was it you that prepped the stat, Will, about Clare and their defence?
So the last three that they've won, they've basically gone out at the earliest possible opportunity.
Yeah. So they're celebrating too hard in the winter.
I don't know. You can say that. I'm not sure there's a common thread over those years, but it is. It's a very unusual thing. And again, yeah. I, throughout the year, thought that it would come together for them. Like in the middle of the league, I really thought, okay, they're going to park that. Once the championship comes around, we'll see the real Clare. They've got some of the personnel coming back in. This is going to be fine.
That's left the will. I'm a fan of split season, coming from a county perspective to a club perspective. The only crux, I think, for one of these, this type of season, is that if you get an injury, you've no time to recover and get back. So you take Jim Ryan, gets an injury, I think it was a hamstring injury, he gets it in the first championship game. We don't see him for the rest of the championship. The critical stages of the championship, and he comes on, was it like at halftime or second half yesterday against Limerick? His championship is gone, and we know how much of a pivotal figure he is for Clare. So in terms of player availability, you have no opportunity or chance to recuperate if you get an injury throughout the championship.
Yeah.
So I do agree that the season should be stretched a bit more to allow more a chance for recovery, but I'm still, it shouldn't be at the expense of the split season.
Okay, we'll do Limerick Cork in way more detail next week, because that's going to be next week's pod. It'll be a preview of the two provincial finals. Forgive me, Murph, for starting with Scale on this one, because he was genuinely concerned about the game at Parnell Park from a Galway perspective. Galway won 29 points to 3:15 in the end. In this case, Carl Mannion, again, 8 frees went over, no scores in play, but there was plenty of points coming from play elsewhere in the team. Brian Kincannon, 5 points, Tom Monaghan, 4, and Conor Whelan getting 3 from play during the game, which is a really good return from the forwards throughout the match. But probably what stands out on this one, Skell, there were plenty of red cards that weren't given during this game. My word. I don't know if it was necessarily like a dirty, dirty game, but Colm Lyons, who was refereeing this, he let a lot of red card offences go.
Can I just... Okay, look, I'm not trying to abscond from responsibility here, okay? Okay. Derek Fahey won, you know, by the letter of the law, yeah, he drew a strike that should have been red. Dahi's won, I'm not 100% certain. But... Was it Conor Donoghue?
Conor Donoghue, yeah.
Where the head nearly came off.
Sweet mother of Jesus. I've never met her. It's like, do you know what a slash hook is, G?
Yeah. I don't use them, but I'm familiar with what they are.
It's like he was swinging a slash hook at branches hanging over a fence. I mean, sweet holy Jesus. And then the umpire missed it just to top it off.
Is the umpire there? Like, what? I just can't get over. And we're laughing now, but like, I don't know what the umpire's looking at. He hit him so hard in the throat, his helmet came off. Like, yeah, I mean, it was mad.
Now, Fleming's a tough left for punishment. Right?
Is he want to be? But no, like, he got up after, like, but jeez.
Yeah, but he's in pure shock. Like, what in the name of God are you watching? Like, decapitate me.
It reminded me of that scene that, like, it's about half an hour into Gladiator where your man, like Russell Crowe's Spaniard, I think he's still in Africa at this stage, wherever. But he chops off your man's head with using two swords. You know,
Are you not entertained?
I think Conor Dunne was going for that.
What did it for me, Murph, was he swung right back, like as if I'm going for this.
Yeah,
I don't give a shit about this. I'm not going for the ball. I'm just going to swing as hard as I can. Like, if that was in the street, you get 2 years.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, like I was just this game, I was going like, there was obviously great intensity in it, but I was just standing there going after 15 minutes. It's like, am I wrong in saying there should be three lads sent off here and nobody's sent off? Like, and then like, not even sent off. There's lads down yellow cards. Like, there's lads not even getting yellows for stuff here. Like,
there's 4 yellows in the whole game.
But there should have been, those ones, let's say, by the letter of the law, 3 red cards, but there was 2 yellows given out over those 3 tackles. And I was like, actually, I don't even know, was there a yellow given out to Fahey? Did Fahey get a yellow? I don't even think he did.
No.
There was one yellow given out. So
Dahi got a yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was 4 yellows in the whole game.
There was, and it's not for us to be laughing at it, but do you know the period of as well where Concannon got hit by Heatherton? Now, I wouldn't consider that a red card or anything like that, but Heatherton came in. But the part before that as well, which people completely miss, I'm fairly sure when I was watching that, Concannon gets the ball and he just throws it on the ground because he's run out of steps, he has 2 catches, he almost overcarried it. And he just threw it on the ground. I was like, she can't do that either. Like, you're not allowed to just throw the ball on the ground. That's a free also. But then as he was going to rise it, I was like, ah, geez, he threw that on the ground. And then Heatherton comes in and clashes. I was like, this game, there's lads going hatches at each other in this. And it's not to laugh at, but I was like, Jesus Christ, how lads didn't get more bookings, I don't know.
We came through, that's the main thing.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of bonkers because I was here watching the Offaly Antrim game and I had the game and the telly beside me up there. Every time I seemed to look up, there was a moment where they were showing a replay where I went, that was surely a red. And then it wasn't.
Yeah.
The game itself, Skell, the final result maybe isn't even totally reflective on this because I thought, because I obviously watched the highlights then afterwards as well. Like, to me, Galway were probably comfortable enough winners on this, but where any team needs to be quite wary of this Dublin side is Dublin going to the All-Ireland Series from here, is they've got goals in this team. So again, Sean Curry gets 1-5, Ree McBreed scores a goal, and Conor Loughran got one as well. Like, they create chances and they're putting up big scoring totals. They're generally, I think other than the Offaly game where they got 2 goals, they've generally been getting 3 pretty much across the board. And they generally get to that kind of 3-15-ish territory in all these games. There's a bit of scoring potential in that team, isn't there?
There is, yeah, but in the same breath, there's concession to it.
No, yeah.
You know, there is concession, particularly on the middle of the park, I say, where a lot of the Galway attacks came from. So, like, I was worried about the pace factor from Dublin, and I was worried about the fact that they could, run through us, if you like, if we didn't get our structure right. And I'd always say, if we don't perform well against teams like Dublin Kilkenny, it's because our half-forward line and midfield aren't connected in terms of work rate perspective. So the importance of Conor Whelan, A, to score 3 points, great, but the work he did yesterday in tandem with Fleming, you know, and Cottle times was imperative to negating Dublin's attack entirely. So that was an extreme positive from our perspective. And if you do that, you put yourself into a position whereby you can stop Dublin running through you and then make them shoot from out the field. And that resulted, you could see, now the weather had a big point to play, too, lads. But the 6 wides the Dublin had, particularly in the first half, was very, very important in the context of the game, because then at halftime, it just felt, I have to say, it felt comfortable. From the perspective that, you know, this game was going to, Galway would see it out. But the goals were, I'd use the word avoidable for the three of them. The first one, which should have been tackled, of course. The second one was the 21, where Fintan would correct his position a bit. And the third one was a blatant throw by Heatherton, but it went in the net regardless. So it's just like, they're all avoidable. And at that stage, you're in, as they say, in American terms, you're in garbage time at the time. So we're quite a healthy lead. So look, I'm very content with yesterday. It was like, it's chalk and cheese when you consider the feeling we had, or I had after the Kilkenny game versus where we are now. Again, it's just, it's so, what you learn from a loss, and particularly a bad loss, is so important to set up your year going forward. So, like, what we got shown up badly in Kilkenny, even from a team structure perspective, from a selection perspective, from a even a positional perspective, shown up. And that game has provided the, I suppose, some of the answers, if you want to call it that, to those questions that were raised by Kilkenny. So I think the Leinster final is going to be a very hotly contested affair. I don't think that it'll be as broad as some may think, considering, because obviously your mind space will get taken back to the first round of the championship. It won't be like that, I can guarantee you. This will be a tight game. I just think Galway have kind of found their flow in terms of team selection and the way they want to play. Being hard to beat is the first one, and being hard to get through. So that's an important facet from our perspective. And look, from Dublin's perspective, it's just that, you know, they have potential to do things. Of course they have, but like, you can, around the middle of the park is where you get at them. You know, if you can stop an element of supply going inside and negate the high ball around the middle of the park, is where you get them. You go through them, providing your own structure as well. So where do they go forward from here? I don't know where Dublin go forward from here.
Murph, to draw on your defensive experience here, it still is a total outsider watching all this. To me, it feels like Owen O'Donnell is a big loss here, where they have a lot of the right pieces there, no?
Let's just correct this. I know firsthand he's not a loss.
Why not?
Because I know for a fact he's a brilliant player.
Mm-hmm.
But he mightn't be the best lad in the dressing room.
Really? Okay.
Straight up. So if you look, I'm open to correction, but I'm 99.9% certain here, right? Owen Cody gets a goal in Ashley's Leinster final, didn't he?
There was a lot of goals in that final, but go on.
Yeah. Owen O'Donnell has changed his boots to the sideline.
Right.
Yeah. I didn't even notice that. Right.
Mad situation entirely. Do you know what I mean?
So, I can only judge him on what I've seen, though. And like, to me, he was a glue and a really important part of their defence. And I just think he'd be a lot more... He'd be valued within that team right now, I think.
Yeah, but the problem isn't there. And look, I know he's potentially to be a great hurler, let's say, and a great asset to a hurling team. But just from what I know, let's say, in my sources, that it can possibly be seen as a positive. He's not there, straight up.
Right. Okay.
Which you might class as bombshell news. Do you know what I mean? But I don't think the Dublin defence is performing that badly, to be honest. You know.
No. I think they've actually been fairly decent now.
They were beaten by, was it 21 points last year?
In the Leinster final? Yeah, it was in a round.
Was it flipping 25 the year before against Clare? You know, in the knockout stages? Something like that. So I'm saying
that was a Tony Kelly hat-trick game, wasn't it?
Yeah, so they're fixing, like, their defence is certainly better this year than it was in years previous. This is me after this, the conceding five goals to Kinney, but you know, getting that, you know.
That game was a bit of a bonkers one, though. It was just bonkers, like a goal fest at both ends. Even the Wexford game was a bit mad at both ends as well. Okay, so I'll ask the question totally differently then, Murph. Dublin from here, obviously now they've got to kind of dust themselves off, get ready to play one of the Joe McDonagh teams in a few weeks' time, and then they've probably got a difficult path coming through Munster teams on the other side of the draw. Do Dublin have it in us to maybe turn over some of the bigger teams, kind of, and I hate to use the assumption here, but half assuming they beat Dublin or Kildare, do they have it in them to beat a Munster team when the knockouts come round then?
It might just be too early for them at this stage. Like, that's just being fairly honest on it. Like, if you look at what's coming out of Munster, like, last year they played Cork in the quarterfinals down in Thurles. Like, this year, hypothetically, they're facing Tipperary, Cork or Limerick, and even a better Cork team. Well, I won't say an even better Cork team than last year, because Cork went on to do what they did. But Cork in a better place currently as we stand than where they were this time last year. I think that's fair to say. No, I just think at the moment it's maybe too early for them. Like, again, we said it earlier in the podcast about giving managers and teams time to actually build in a direction in terms of what way they want the team to go. You can't just turn it on overnight. I think Niall Caolcott has done a great job. I think he's a great manager from what I see from him. Really passionate manager on the line, but I hear him just speaking common sense after games and being really balanced, really in control in terms of his assessment of the games, etc. So I just think he's really good, and I think he's definitely the right man to be there for Dublin. I just look at Dublin going, they've done all this without Donal Burke, for example. Like, I mean, like, that is a great achievement. They need Donal Burke back, though, to really pose a threat against someone. And the reason I say that is you just have to be balanced in terms of what to expect from teams. Like, teams to get past, let's say, we're talking get past an All-Ireland quarter-final, if they're to beat one of the Munster teams, let's say, get past an All-Ireland quarter-final, get into an All-Ireland semi-final. Are Dublin in the top four? No. Like, can they do it at the moment in terms of catching a team on the hop? I don't think so. Like, by the time you get to a quarter-final, teams have gotten that proverbial kick in the arse, as we've been saying.
And they're correcting more, aren't they?
Yeah, do you know,
like, corrected, you know,
it's not the time you're going to actually catch somebody. You know, the next available time where you catch someone is an All Ireland semi final. And I know people might be listening to that saying, why, how does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But put it this way, you could win, you could just stagger through the back door there and go, okay, right, this team, they didn't win their province, they're maybe not up to much. And then you can catch a team in the All Ireland semi final. But when you're playing teams in the quarter final, you've all pretty much come the same path and you've all gotten that little bit of a knock that you're like, no, we're going out here and we're performing. So Dublin's ability to catch a team like that now, I just don't think is there. But having said that, I don't want to take the gloss off it. I'm delighted to see that Dublin are heading in the right direction. I really do think that. And even seeing what Niall Caolacán has done in terms of bringing lads back in, like talking about Heatherton and these lads, like they've done a really good job. And he seems to be attracting these lads back in. I think that's a big thing for Dublin hurling. Like they have a lot of guys up there that it's attracting them in. And like they've lost lads over the years to the football, like lads who would have been really influential that would have done a savage job for them. But it's now making a situation in Dublin where let's see what they can do this year. And it's not writing off the rest of the year, but let's see what they can do. And then get ready then for next year where they're maybe drawing one or two more lads. Donal Burke gets back fit and healthy. Let's say maybe they have a really productive club championship up in Dublin again where Nafina, Kilmacud, all them are going hammer and tongs at it. And one or two more players emerge, like AJ Murphy again, like he had an outstanding year for Nafina. Like he probably needs another year now to really, like what he was doing with Nafina, it's hard to just translate that into with Dublin. But I think as a cohesive unit, as Dublin and hurling as a cohesive unit, I think next year, this year will stand to them hugely. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm writing off the rest of this year, not at all. But I just think it's maybe a few weeks too early for them to actually go and make a real tilt and topple one of them monster teams. It's just very hard to see it at this stage.
Yeah.
The next game put years on me, by the way, which is Offaly's win against Antrim in what was effectively the relegation playoff. So Offaly won 3-15 to 1-16. Game should have been way more comfortable for Offaly than it was. So they played like really well against the wind in the first half. This is the frustrating part about it, right? So they get 2-9 to 11 points up. They get goals. Dan Ravenhill scores a penalty. Charlie Mitchell played really, really well. They had an early goal from Brian Dighton as well. All looking in a pretty good position. Antrim, again, as has been happening, last three games in a row they've had a red card. Niall O'Connor was sent off. I think we probably saw the close-up last night where there's a stamp on Charlie Mitchell, who... Yeah, I mean, to be fair to even Davian afterwards, the one red card he didn't disagree with of the ones that have happened in recent weeks. But, like, after in that really good place, you're thinking 2-9 to 11, Gale win behind him in the second half. The rain has disappeared. The sun has broken out in Tullamore. It's surely been a case of they'll just kick on from here, win the game against 14 men. And then McNaughton puts the ball into the net with a few minutes to go. And next thing, Antrim are back within touching distance. And it took a really good finish from Killian Sampson late in the game to get a goal where I think Antrim could feel a little bit aggrieved by the gloss that's on the final scoreline. So Offaly win 3-15 to 1-16 in the end. But Antrim were very much in the game with 14 men with 4 minutes to go. But in a way, Murph, the only thing that matters is the team that win. And that's the game at such a relegation final feel about it. And I was listening to both the managers talking to GA Plus beforehand. Noel Connors interviewed his former manager, Davey Fitzgerald, and it was Richie Hogan who interviewed Johnny Kelly before the game. And both of them were saying they don't really care if it's ugly today. It's just about winning. And ultimately, no matter what happened in that 15 to 20 minute spell for Offaly where they couldn't score, they just got over the line.
Yeah, that's all that matters. And I'm speaking from experience on I probably hurled in 5 relegation finals with the club, I'd say, from senior. You don't care if it's a pint to nothing at the end of the game. Just as long as you're the pint, that's it. It's not about being pretty. It's not about anything else. Like, teams find it very hard to completely play free-flowing hurling in these games because there's almost a feeling, even when you're 4 or 5 pints ahead in these games, I think, Will, you kind of touched on earlier, you see a finish line and you go, okay, we're nearly there now. We're nearly there. And you nearly want to fall over the finish line. And you don't. Like, you know, the team gets a cage. Not to say a cage. They get a goal and suddenly now you're rattled. And it's just, they're just not pretty. But Offaly were the better team.
You could see it yesterday. What happened was they started retreating back towards goal. The kind of natural instinct became, ooh, we're a man up and we have to win, but still got to make sure we don't concede another goal. So everyone starts going backwards. And then the forwards are getting isolated and they're snatching the shots. It was purely down to nothing to do with hurling ability. That ability was all there in the first half. Second half, you could just feel the nervousness with some of the misses as well.
But it's like what I was saying when we were speaking about Watford and Cork, and I was saying there's two things that Watford would hope would happen. They would get a goal and Cork would panic and lose their shape. Mm. That's what I'm saying, that Cork didn't, because they've just been, I suppose, tested at a higher level where they're able to stay functioning and not panic. But you just see in that relegation final Offaly just started reverting to type, where it's just a case of you just start running back towards your own goal because you're like, defend, defend, defend. And it confusion enters the situation, a little bit of panic enters the situation. Like, you look at that last goal, Charlie Mitchell wasn't it, got the last goal.
Killian Thompson.
Nice. Ball breaks out in the sideline.
Yeah.
Ball sprayed across the 21, lands into his hand, hangs it up. Like, Dighton had an opportunity before it as well to get a goal. Was it maybe 2 or 3 minutes, maybe 5 minutes before it? He had an opportunity to get a goal. There was opportunities there, but it was just so cagey. That's just what I was linking to with Cork and Watford. That it's a thing that if you have that trait where you're going, we have to stick to the process here now, stay playing the way we're playing. Like, we bet Antrim really well in Tullamore earlier this year. There's no reason to think that we can't do the same. They're down to 14 men. But all that kind of goes out the window when a little bit of panic comes in and you just kind of, you know, you throw everything out and you just start running around the field after the ball. And that's, it's dangerous when you start doing that then, because gaps start to appear and players start breaking through. And we saw it with Carlo and Leash as well. Like, you know, as in, that's a situation where Carlo are going, all we have to do is defend here, and a big ignorant ball goes in on top, and it's chaos. Like, you know, it's chaos. So, and this feeling, I guarantee the feeling on the field would have been the very same for those lads, because it wasn't relegation, but the winner for this still is in the hunt to play Liam McCarthy Hurling the following year and win the Joe McDonagh. Mm-hmm. Just that's the feeling amongst players when they're in these really tight situations.
Yep. I think all credit to Antrim as well. It's a team who'd taken a 28-point kick and could have felt, you know, a little bit sorry for themselves. Keelan Malloy came back into the team, but it was clear like he wasn't quite back to 100%, but they just kept grafting away during a game when they were a man short for the vast majority of it and stayed in the fight all the way up to the very end. But for them, unfortunately, they go back down now to the Joe McDonagh Cup and have to kind of, I guess, rebuild. And it can be difficult. As Murph mentioned, Carlo are going to be spending a second season down after that draw against Leash. And Dave Fitzgerald is pretty non-committal after the game. And I don't want to turn this into the two lads having a go at Davey again this week, and it becomes our kind of weekly thing to do. But I will bring you what Davey said about Sambo McNaughton after the game. Because Sambo was very critical about the comments that Davey had made, particularly about the referees. And then Dave Fitzgerald said, when he was on the GA Plus after the game, he felt that McNaughton's comments lacked class. He's entitled to an opinion. He was in management himself. Maybe he didn't have a great record in that, though. I thought he'd show a bit more class than that. Sambo can talk a lot of times and off he goes, but the direction I'm showing today is what we're thinking. And then Davey kind of said they had conversations in recent weeks about the culture that's required for Antrim. Said we for a lot of it, then said they when he was talking about next season. So read into that what you want, whether Davey Fitzgerald is going to be around for next season. But that's the Davey and Sambo beef currently.
The only thing I'll just say, and again, I completely agree with you that we shouldn't be... Well, it's not that we want to turn anything into
it. It just becomes every week if we do it every week, yeah.
Yeah, but like, I completely understand if Davey came out and he said about, you know, other people saying anything about the setup, including ourselves. If he came out and said this, and what do you know about it? I'd say he's entitled to say that. But like, if Sambo is telling you what's what, like, I've been very lucky to spend time with Sambo. I've been up in the Glens of Antrim up there. Like, he is Antrim hurling. Like, him and his generation, Antrim would not have been playing over the weekend at the level they're playing at, only for these lads paved the way. He's a very passionate man. He only wants what's best for Antrim hurling. So when I was hearing Davey kind of having a fire back at him, I'm just going, no, like, when Sambo's talking about Antrim hurling, just shut up and listen. Don't fire back shots at him, because like, all you have to do is watch that man's Lake Regale to see what he did and what he had to do for Antrim hurling. And that is still, for me, hugely relevant at the moment. So when I'm hearing that, it's like if John Fenton turned around to me and started talking about Cork hurling, I'll shut up and listen. If Brian Lowen tells me about Clare hurling, I'll shut up and listen. So that's just the one thing where I was saying, is that you're on his patch and he's very passionate. This is something close to his heart. I just don't like that part where you turn around and you fire shots back at him. You're entitled to say I disagree with it, absolutely, but there was shots fired back at him there that I would completely disagree with. And I just bring it back to the point that if Sambo's talking about Antrim Hurling, shut up and listen. Don't say anything back, because that man knows Antrim Hurling inside out.
Yeah, the management line was unnecessary. I think you can feel all the rest of it and say, look, I'm disappointed that he was criticising me. He had a massive game for the team and all that. But the management line was just unnecessarily catty.
Yeah.
So you had Wexford win the dead rubber against Kilkenny in the end, 219-115. Lee Chin, as a lot of people have been bemoaning, we don't get to see him for the rest of the championship. 113, albeit 9-5 from frees. Rory O'Connor with 1-1. Again, TJ not quite keeping the scoring up with Patrick Corgan, but still putting up a big score. 1-4 for him. Yakeen Kenny scoring 3 points. Murph, I wanted to ask you about the one thing that came out of this, because Wexford go down with a bit of pride at the end of the championship and pick up what feels like their nearly annual win against Kilkenny at this stage. But what's this crack about Adrian Mullen playing at six? What's going on here?
I don't know. I didn't pick the team. I haven't a clue.
I know, but
I will give you my opinion. I didn't. Do you know what? When I read the team, first of all, I didn't even notice it, to be honest. I was looking around the field going, quite early on, you could see that there was a lot of changes, and I didn't actually even cop it. And then someone texted me and said, geez, Adrian's at centre-back. And I went, Jesus. I don't know what the thinking was behind it. Like, part of me was trying to think, Is it just to get a bit of time into Adrian's legs? Like, he rolled the ankle against Galway, was out for a week or two, come on as a sub, all this. Was it a case of... They're not thinking of playing him there. That would be my estimate of it, that they're not thinking of playing him there. Why? Because they have, we'll call it, they have four lads who are jostling for those positions at the moment in Mikey Carey, Blanche... let's say if you're even including Paddy Deegan, Richie Reid, like there's so many lads competing for that line that I'm just thinking it was maybe just the game that was in it for whatever reason they played them. They can't be considering playing them there, because Adrian Mullen, the furthest back you play him is midfield. He's just like, he's an engine on him. His ability to get scores is outstanding as well. So I just think it was a game that was in it. They just decided to play him at centre back. And that was it. Like, I remember years ago, this is not deflecting or saying anything different, but I remember going to a Kilkenny match years ago in 2000, and I'm going to say 4 or 5, and Brian Cody played DJ Carey at centre-back against Leash, up in Leash, and I don't know why, and he just played him there. Are you going to play him centre-back? No. Did he ever play him again? No. So I'm just thinking that maybe it was a kind of a de facto midfield type role that just threw Adrian into, but I really don't know why it was done.
Yeah, it's curious to me, Skell, particularly when a lot of Wexford's play, particularly from the longer puckouts, comes in that area. And you know that Lee Chin's going to be drifting into there to play a non-specialist centre-back in there, unless you're thinking about playing Mullen there. I don't know. I'm asking you to get into Derek Ling's head here, but why?
Well, to my knowledge, I mean, Murph can correct me, but I don't think he's ever featured for Ballyhale at centre-back.
I've never seen him there, no.
Yeah, so basically there's no history towards this. Sometimes maybe, I've seen it in Galway too, like even Micheál played Conor Cooney in the Challenge game centre-back. And the reason I was given when I asked was that it's where he's in the absolute thick to get his lungs up. Because you're in the thick of it 24-7 at centre-back. Maybe Adrian wouldn't be a wing forward or corner forward. I don't know. But for me, reading between the lines, there's, like, as an outsider, there's no way in hell you, I don't want to use the word sacrifice or waste. You don't waste one of your best forwards at centre-back when you've got plenty of cover there in the first place.
I think sacrifice is fine, by the way. It's like, you wouldn't want to sacrifice Adrian Mullen's ability further up the pitch in order to play him further back.
Yeah, critics. So obviously he's had a bit of a bit part season so far in terms of appearances from an injury perspective. But when he's, you know, there on a repetitive basis, he's one of Kilkenny's first names in the team sheet, one of the best forwards, without question. So if he's one of your most potent forwards, your best forwards, he's that unique ability to be able to drift out to midfield, to shoot from distance, to put kind of the opposition into an element of confusion with his position and sense. You know, you don't want to lose that in your team. So the fact that he went into centre-back, I think, from my perspective, was just getting game time. Heavy game time in a pivotal position in the middle of the field where everything has happened at the one time. I don't see any great future from a centre-back because, again, he's so valuable up the pitch and Kilkenny have ample cover back there anyway. So I think it's just an exercise, get some work into his legs and into his wrists and move on after that.
Okay, well, we'll see if he appears further back later on, but I think, again, attacking midfielder half forward is by far his best position. Loads of drama last day of the Jumbo in the Cup. The one I was watching on Clubber, people have probably seen the clip where the Clubber commentators absolutely lose it.
That's at the end of the game
with the late goal that Leash get. But It was credited, I think, originally maybe to Duggan, but I saw a picture which I was sent from the Leash PRO, Una Maher, who got a great snap of it, where it looks like it's Mark Dowling who just flicks one. He was wearing 24 and just about flicks it, deflects it just enough to go past the Carlow goalkeeper and a defender who were back in the line. As Murph said, it was an agricultural long ball in. But wait, because
can you, that long ball, I think with Delaney hit it, was it?
Yeah.
Yellow helmet. Like, how often have we seen games where it's kind of last chance loon and that long ball goes nowhere? The delivery is terrible.
Yeah.
That delivery was absolutely perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
It was rotten for a defence. You know what I mean? And like, Murph, I saw Les putting their hand up for that. Don't put your hand up.
Oh, cheers.
Fucking pull and get it out of there as hard as you can. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whip
yeah.
it. Put the ball yeah. delivery in.
Class. Effie Graf, swing as hard as you can. Hurl over the head.
I do feel for Carlo a little bit here because 3 minutes were indicated at the end of the game. The 3 minutes went, Leash got a sideline, took the attack, turned into a 65, gets popped in, they get the goal. Lovely delivery, as Scale mentioned, to set it up. And it was it was scrambled. That's basically, it was like that, as you said, last chance saloon. The ball's in the area. Yeah, if you're a defender, you try and get out. If you're forward, you try and force it towards goal in any way possible. So Leash get the draw in the end. They had been behind for most of that game. I think they led a little bit in the first half, but generally Carlo were on top. Paddy Boland, Chris Nolan got a goal each. Marty Cavanagh, as often happens, scores 10 points for Carlo. They will have felt that they were home and hosed. It just wasn't really clicking for Leash during the game. Mossy Keys primarily from frees with 14 points during it, but their attack just didn't function in the way it has early in the championship, where they were handing out some big beatings, particularly against Down and against Kerry. They're not quite hitting those heights at the moment, but now at least they've got 2 weeks to reset if you're a Leash fan getting ready for the Joe McDonagh Cup final. But Carlo will feel sickened that they didn't get to the final with the position that they were in late on in the game. It's going to be Kildare to go to the final. First time ever they've been to the Joe McDonagh Cup final. So they were Chrissy Ring winners last year, promoted in the league up to Division 1B for next season. David Qualter was the star man for them in that win against Down, 113 of their 126, as they beat Down by 126 to 114. Down then were waiting to hear what the result was going to be in Tralee, and it was just a comfortable win for Westmeath. So Kerry's 8 years in the Joe McDonagh Cup has come to an end. Christy Ring, they won it 10 years ago to get promoted up from that division. They're going to have to do that again to get back to the second flight. But Westmeath won very comprehensively, not controversially in any way. Killian Doyle, 15 points during the game. David O'Reilly, Niall O'Brien getting the goals during it. Saoirse Bulfin said afterwards he hasn't really given any great thought as to whether he's going to be the Westmeath manager next season. He did joke and say he hadn't even thought about what he was having for dinner that night. No more so than thinking about if he was going to be in charge for next season. So upshot of it is Leash against Kildare, 20,000 free tickets available, about 19,000 left at this stage if you want to go to the Leinster Joe McDonagh Cup final doubleheader, and Kerry relegate down to the Christy Ring, which is a terrible disappointment because it's not that long ago that Kerry were playing in finals of the Joe McDonagh Cup and were knocking at the door of trying to get into the Leinster Championship proper and kind of staying that territory as well. But Kildare, some story, Murph. We've mentioned it a few times, but like, to go from losing to Kerry, who then went the other way after the first game, to then sweeping out the results effectively after that to get to a first ever final off the back of being in the Christy Ring. I know sometimes you can get a boost when you've won a final the year before, but that's some going to get to a final like this.
Oh, it is, yeah. And if you look at the means in which they're doing it, like, okay, they're facing Leash now in the final. Their performance against Leash,
they hammered a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it was really impressive performance. Like, they really look like what they know about, and beat Carlo as well along the way. Like, you know, if you told them at the start of the year or start of this, the Joe McDonagh, that they'd be taking wins off both of them, like that they are really good measurables for them. And, you know, it is off the back of Brian Dillon's done a fantastic job. Again, my former teammate, David Herity, again, he put down 5 years there as well. Like, they've had great lads there over the last few years, in fairness, that have put in a lot of work. But it's great for Brian. Brian's a great manager. He spent a few years with Kilkenny Camogie here and done a fantastic job as well. Won All-Irelands with them. So, I mean, he's just doing a great job up there at the moment. I've actually been lucky enough to see him operate in a few sessions. Like, he's a sharp fella now, in fairness. And wherever he goes, he'll do a good job. But, but just go back to Kildare. They have been playing a really nice brand of hurling. This is not an accident by any means. And I think Leash will be looking at them going, as we've worked out for us here, absolutely we can beat them, but this is a good Kildare team. And that'll be a good final. That should be a really good final.
Yeah, there you go. So Kildare won 11 points when they met in Moore Park. So sometimes it's difficult to repeat the trick a couple of weeks later after playing a team so late in the championship, but we shall see. Skell, final question to you, because I forgot to ask it at the end of the Galway one. What does the rest of the summer look like for Galway?
I was actually going to ask you guys, what's the hurling rankings now? When Murphy raised the point about Dublin,
can't land that in at the end of the podcast.
Hold on now, we're old counter in the corner there, and I know this includes Willie Maher and us saying goodbye to Willie and whatever else. We're 2 hours 45 into recording of this as the scale goes. Yeah. Let's just power rank all the teams.
No, I was going to say, but I said I told when Murphy raised the question, are Dublin in the top four? I got me thinking, what's my? I have two lists here, like, and one is more ridiculous than others. Do you know what list I was writing here as Murph talks about his points? This is how stupid my brain works sometimes, right? Mm-hmm, Murph, mm-hmm. Will, you mentioned you can eat elephant meat, right? I started listing all the meats I've eaten.
That's a good list to do, yeah.
And I'm at 15.
15?
Yeah,
I've eaten 100% alligator. Writing this down. Have you?
Yeah, I've eaten alligator.
I had alligator and slits as well, so yeah.
I've eaten buffalo. You know, I've eaten pheasant.
Yeah.
I've eaten rabbit.
Terrified.
Like, this is the crazy shit. Right, so Will, I forget your question. What was it?
Do you know what? Next week, tell us how Galway are doing.
Yeah.
Give us the weirdest meat you have on your 15, and that can be the end of the pod for this week.
Sure, alligator's up there, like. You know.
I have ostrich.
Ostrich. No. I've eaten ostrich, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, eat ostrich in Africa.
I'll be honest, South Africa. South Africa, I think, accounts for about 7 or 8 of these meats. Them boys will eat anything. Well, that's it, they'll eat anything, but like, they just love every type of.
I ate a blesbok, right? Do you know what that is?
No.
First cousin of a springbok. Blesbok. I don't know what it was. I ate it on safari.
Yeah, yeah.
Tastes grand. My favourite meat, didn't say that, minus Jake, was veal. Oh, veal is unreal.
Veal is good,
Is veal like beef, or is it a bit more gamey than beef?
Jeez, I even hate talking.
So whilst I've had veal, I definitely had it at some point. But I can't remember.
You know what it is, don't you? You know what it is.
Yeah,
like?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. It is. So yes, it's a beef, but it's a much more tender type of meat. Yeah, it's less. But come here. Sorry. Let's go back to the topic at hand. Galway.
Before you go on this, like, so if you're in the comments at the moment and you've made it this far, we thank you for making it this far, first of all. You liking, sharing the video, leaving a comment helps us out. Power rank your favourite meats in the comments, by all means, please, and we will return to this next week. So Galway this summer, how are you going to do?
I can't let you go back that quickly. This is brilliant transition. Just go, I've eaten alligator, I've beaten first cousin of springbok, actually enough, but how Galway are going to go this summer? Galway are going to say, that's the hardest transition you've ever done.
Don't worry, we got to plug in for putting some comments in. Put the comments in, by the way, on the Spotify, that helps. Leave us a rating on Apple or any other podcast feed, by all means. James Skell, how are we going to get on?
So yesterday's evidence was that the structure of the team is now correct. It's fully correct. They found kind of what they're after in terms of a nucleus of a team, a system of play that is both defensive and can facilitate our attack. So I'm happy. You know, I'm content where we find ourselves now. And it puts us in a position whereby we can really throw herbs at Kilkenny and see where it takes us. And like, I think, I do want us to believe, you mightn't think this no more, but I do believe that the game gets closer to, 51-49. If you asked me a couple of weeks ago, I was 70-30 in favour of Kilkenny, don't get me wrong, but it's a little bit tighter than I'm thankful it's a little bit tighter. So obviously the minimum is a quarter final, Will. We're playing obviously one of the Munster teams, I'd imagine, which is most likely going to be Tipperary by the looks of it. So that's going to be a tough one. So it's in our best interest to win this. So I am going to say we'll beat Kilkenny in the final. Go from there.
You can talk yourself back from that next week when we do the preview of the provincial finals and the Joe McDonagh Cup final. Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure. Hopefully, as a listener, you're listening to this in the right order where you've listened to the main pod. Then you realise, oh, look, there's a members pod. There's an hour chat with Willie Maher about what's going to happen with hurling and what's the future of hurling. That will be available as well. I'm going to go off and put the two of these together. The video may well be, where are we now, Monday? Tuesday morning. It could be for the videos by the time that they process and get ready. But I'll get the pods out tonight in audio form. As I say, you help us an awful lot if you leave us a rating, leave us a comment, share it around. You know, be the human algorithm. Tell people about the hurling pod as well. And that helps us out too. For now, James Skell, thanking you, sir.
Cheers, folks.
Jeez, we didn't do that with Willie Maher. We should have went. Willie Maher, thanking you. See what he said.
Nah,
he would have had a clever answer, I'd say.
Yeah, he would have, maybe. Yeah.
Paul Murphy, thanking you, sir.
Thanks very much, Ed.
All right, but see the boys the weekend. We're looking ahead to the provincial finals. Take it easy.